afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Friday's edition. It's always Friday here on Registered Ear Offenders out here at SkidRowStudios.com. My name is Sal Rodriguez. I'm seated across from my co-host, Chris Z. How's it going over there, Chris?
Good, Sal. Sal, you are ear delicious.
Thank you very much. You know, I have to say we're like opposites today. I am wearing a shirt and tie, and Chris is wearing a t-shirt.
Sal, today was one of those days when every red light in the city colluded against me. So I made it here with not a moment to spare. I didn't put my... I had a nice shirt, a shirt and tie, just like yours, because I have an appointment after the show as well. I just raced here in this tattered t-shirt. I fit in with the local populace, though.
Yeah, well, the thing I really enjoy that is just a plain white t-shirt. It's not like, you know, a Van Duch t-shirt or something. It's just a plain white Fonzarelli type t-shirt.
Plain white, but it does show its age. I think we can agree on that. It's kind of gone from white to grayish. You know?
I see that once upon a time your arms were larger because the sleeves are just hanging all over the place.
I'll go with that, sure. And yeah, my arms were huge.
Don't be so vague with us. What do you mean you have an appointment after this and you're wearing a shirt and tie? What the hell is your appointment for?
I just have to go to work.
Okay, good.
My work requires me to wear a collared shirt, Oxford style, and a tie.
I am wearing my shirt and tie today because I had an audition for AAA auto insurance commercial. And it was terrible. I was so focused on Registered Ear Offenders getting over here, sitting in this seat, enjoying time with my friends. I was not even there at all. And to a recommendation for any actors out there, if you're not going to be present emotionally, don't even go.
Yeah, that's funny because I wanted to crash that audition. Sal was nice enough to offer me the details, and I was going to show up as I've done on several occasions and actually got a call back once or twice from an audition I wasn't even supposed to be at. But I had a couple things to work on for the show. And my mind was there, man.
You could have been there too. There was a lot of various goofy guy types, which I think I probably fit in, you know. I'm like an average looking guy that can go goofy, whereas I think that you have more of a character look than I do, I think.
Yeah, Sal and I have come to terms with the fact that we fit in a category that a couple years ago we would have described as unflattering and maybe taken umbrage to. I've actually submitted on many occasions on LA Casting to not too good looking. And I read that and I go, oh, well, hell, I'm in.
But for the listeners out there, Chris is not... Actually, I think, Chris, if you have a scale, you know, you have like, you know, a disgusting ugly on this end and maybe Brad Pitt or George Clooney on that end. You know, you are to the right of average, I would say. I would say that you're a little better looking than average.
Well, I appreciate that, Sal. But bear in mind, I've toured the country and things really are relative because I've been places where I am George Clooney.
I was just there. You know where I was the other day? I swear to God, I was in the Goodwill. And I was saying, I am the best looking guy in the Goodwill at this very moment.
I think the only time I've ever been the best looking guy in the room in Los Angeles proper was when I was taking an improv class.
And at the improv class, you're the best looking guy.
You know what the average improviser looks like.
Does that include the females? You're better looking than the average female improviser.
Most of the females, yes. I was a better looking female than most of the females in the improv class.
And you know, and that's why I say Chris would have been great on the audition because Chris is very comedic. He's very, you know, I think in an acting environment, you're probably funnier than I am in that instance. So I think you would have actually been good on today's audition because they had all different types there. They really all different races. Usually you go on an audition, everybody kind of looks like you. They're all the same race or something. On this audition, all different races, all different ages. Just all people with comedic backgrounds were there.
Which, cool, might mean that they were genuinely kind of objective in their approach and were just really, really looking for whoever they thought was the funniest, right?
Well, or I don't know about the funniest, but, you know, whoever looked good for their campaign, you know. Anybody want to give us a call? 1-800-893-9562. That is the number to our show live here in the studio, broadcasting at SkidRowStudios.com out of downtown Los Angeles. Anybody listening to our show, we got a little teaser. Who's coming up? Who's going to be the guest on our show today?
We got Jersey City native Vince Royale. Vince is a stand-up comic. He's an actor. He's even a recording artist. He's been featured on VH1, CBS, ABC, GSN, MTV, dozens of commercials, independent films, and on and on and on. He's performed across the country as a comedian. Shared stages with Louis C.K., Tommy Davidson, Jim Gaffigan, and he produces shows locally. And by locally, I mean the general Southern California vicinity. Great shows at some of the local improvs. And the reason he's here, though, is because recently he's been featured in a kind of a documentary film about upcoming comedians that's nearing completion. It's been 4 years in the making. And even though he tells me he can't talk too much about it, Vince is going to appear on the MTV Networks next March. He has a recurring role on a reality show.
Well, great. Look forward to meeting Vince Royale. And we also have our segment Turning Points, We're going to talk about those moments in our lives that really affected us and made us go make a 90 degree or a 180. You can call it a 180 or a 90 degree turn. Greatest disappointments, those moments in our lives that are just, it's like the opposite of when we peaked, essentially. It's when we didn't peak. What's the opposite of peaking? Shrinking, going down?
When we dipped.
When we dipped, there we go.
When we hit bottom.
And of course we
bottomed
have,
out, yeah.
And of course we have Chris's Corner and Sal's Weekly Rant. And if we have time for our final segment, Tragic Comedy, where we will invite our guests to participate in that, where we talk about our worst comedy experiences as stand-up comedians, because all three of us in this room have done stand-up comedy and or are out there on the circuit doing stand-up comedy, and we're going to talk about the worst times that we ever had. I know I've got a couple of them. Are you ready to get into our show, Chris? You ready to get into our first segment, which is Turning Points?
Yes. So I've talked about Renee before. Renee was the one who got away. She's the one that basically, you know, ruined me. The one who you'll never love unconditionally again. You know that things will never be that good. That was your shot.
Well, how long were you dating her?
I dated her for, I think it was about a full year.
A full year?
Yeah, at least. But I've talked about it a little bit before, so I don't want to kind of rehash things. She is the focus of my turning point, because I was so, and I've talked about how I had to break up with her. I didn't want to, but I had to. I was financially destitute and determined to move out to California. I was approaching 30 years old. I knew that it was now or never. So I set a date and I said, no matter what, barring death or dismemberment, I am getting in my car. And on this day, I am driving to California and beginning life anew.
Yeah, you shared that exact story on another episode.
Right. But I also talked about how after we broke up, we kind of stayed in contact for about, you know, almost a year. We, instead of talking every day, we talk every other day. And whenever we were able to kind of meet up, we did, you know, basically conduct ourselves as if we were still going out. But the turning point was when I knew it was officially over. And it wasn't a conversation. She came down because she would do these work contracts. Briefly, she would go to the Kennedy Space Center and she would put on these performances for children, her and a couple other Canadian actors. And I lived in Orlando, so we would, you know, we would always find a way to connect. But this one time, you know, I could just sense that something was wrong in the phone call, because she was unwilling to kind of meet me and was like, well, you know, I have dinner with my coworkers that day and my, you know, just a couple excuses when usually the first priority was for us to get together. And I remember I thought it over and I basically, you know, and it basically came down to me saying, you know what? Forget everything else. If you want to get married, I'll marry you. You want me to move to Canada? I'll move to Canada. Whatever you want to do, I just don't want to be a part. And, you know, she, who had been the first one to ever discuss the idea of us getting married, said no. And I just didn't see it coming, man. And to tell you that I cried like a bitch would do a disservice to how much I cried, how low I sunk. I remember sitting on the floor in my living room, just because, like, I didn't have the energy to do anything else. And my two dogs are kind of wandering up to me, and I was just wondering why the hell I was sitting on the floor.
You know, I'm surprised to hear this, Chris, because I could not imagine, from I've known you, what, 6, 7 years, I could not imagine you crying for anything except your own career. So that's actually surprising to hear. Hey, listen, we have a caller. Let's go ahead and patch our caller through. Caller, you're on the air with Registered Ear Offenders, Sal Rodriguez and Chris Z.
Hello.
Yes.
Sal.
Yes, hello.
Hey, it's Jeff. What's going on, you guys?
What's up, man? How's it going?
So what's the big announcement, or did I miss it?
No. Jeremy, can I go ahead and give our big announcement, or are we still on hold for that?
Are you building?
Definitely
up to
still
it,
on hold for that.
Okay. Unfortunately, Jeff, I'm sorry. I know Jeff Sparks calling from the Moreno. I was going to say Moreno Valley in an Inland Empire. We cannot divulge our official big news yet, but please stay tuned. It is coming soon. You did not miss anything. We're going to be making some big news, some big announcements coming up.
Things are happening with the show, and we will discuss them just as soon as we are able.
Awesome. Well, you guys keep it up.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for calling. So was that the end of your story, Chris? You basically got brokenhearted by this Canadian girl.
But that was a turning point, Sal, because when that was officially over and it was out of my hands and it was out of my control, I came out here, man. I quite literally packed everything I owned into my Hyundai. You know, I couldn't even see. I couldn't even use the rearview mirror because it was stuffed, you know, so tightly. And I drove 40 hours across the country. I will tell you this, though.
This sounds so similar. Didn't you tell this story before, didn't you?
No, I told the story about the relationship with her. I think she might have even been my when we peaked. But in this case, this is kind of the official end of it. And here's how I knew that this was a very significant moment in my life. One, I called my best friend of 13 years at the time, my best friend Jay, who lived in New York. And I told him, I said, dude, you know, I said, it's my relationship's over. I'm done with this. You know, I'm done with Florida. Nothing good has ever come here. Nothing good ever will. And he said, you know, man, I'd love to have you here for a while. I'd like to help you get yourself set up. But, you know, I don't think my girl would go for it. And that's when I knew that too, that friendship had officially run its course.
And did you go to your living room and cry?
No, I did do a lot more crying. And I'll tell you why. I needed a job and I got like a 3-day contract for like kind of like a country club resort area that had just opened in Orlando. They hired me and I was like a bar back. I would, you know, basically refill whatever supplies were necessary on opening day. And so what I would do is I would make my deliveries to the bartender. And as soon as I delivered it, I would go to the bathroom because I had a few minutes of kind of respite in between each errand. I would cry my eyes out, clean up, go back to work for 10, 20 more minutes, go back to the bathroom, cry my eyes out, go back.
And how old were you at this time?
About 25, 26.
Wow. Well, you know, a similar thing happened to me because my turning points is about a breakup. But in this instance, no, I did cry. I think I did cry. Or maybe I was just so numb. Basically, at one point in time, I was actually engaged. There was a girl named Debbie who was foolish enough to agree to marry me. I put a ring on her finger and we were going to be married. We were together for 3 years. Well, we broke up and I was just about the age of 30 when we broke up. And at that point, I thought to myself, well, I'm broken up with my girlfriend. I'm working as a trainer. Am I going to go to work on a cruise ship or go work at a resort? So I started to apply at all the various cruise lines. I started to notify the Grand Wailea Resort. I'm going to go be a trainer somewhere beautiful on some cruise ship, maybe a recreation director, social director, Julie Cruise director, if you will. I wanted to hit the road and hit the high seas. So at the last minute, though, right before I was setting up interviews for these cruise lines and these resorts, I thought to myself, well, you've always wanted to do stand-up comedy. You've always seemed to have a knack for it. Acting, everything entertainment related. Why don't you stick around, give it a shot, see where it goes, see where it takes you. So it was at that moment that I could either have gone this way and maybe I'd be on some cruise line somewhere, or I go this way and now here I am as co-host of Registered Ear Offenders and have done a lot of stand-up comedy and acting and recently just obtained my SAG card for you people out there pounding the pavement. It can happen. So essentially, that was my turning point where I realized I could have went that way. I could have went this way. I chose going this way and now here I am. And so this was a turning point. I did cry. I did sit in the living room and cry over Debbie. She's happily married now, I'd like to say. Debbie, if you're out there, I know I see you. I see you on Facebook. I see you're having a great time.
I wish, Sal, that seeing my ex on Facebook was the only way I saw her. She too, just booked a national commercial that runs every 15 fucking minutes.
Chris was teased the other night because he was forced to watch his ex-girlfriend national commercial, what, twice in one day on a gas pump included?
Yeah, that's true. I was pumping gas. And I look on the little tiny monitor at the Chevron station, and it's her commercial. And for some strange reason, it was the only programming the monitor would show. So it just kept repeating the same commercial over and over again.
It just ran on a continuous loop.
Yeah. And the first time I saw it, I was sitting in an Oyster bar waiting to do this nightmarish, awful open mic in the Valley. And just sitting there kind of, you know, ruining my state. And to look up and see that man was just a swift kick in the balls.
And then you were crying next to the gas pump there, just like, woo!
I'm not gonna admit to keying the monitor. So,
speaking of keying, you know, one thing I've always wanted is I've wanted a key specifically for keying. Because I don't want to ruin my house key. I don't want to ruin my car key. I would like a key only for keying. Do they have that?
It would be large. It would look like a key to a castle or something, you know?
It would have like a fuck you imprinted on it.
You'd have keep it in a case so it doesn't cut your pocket.
A special sheath. Hey, listen, Chris, we are running short on time here. Why don't we go ahead and get into our guest? And why don't you go ahead and give our guest his special introduction, complete with its own introduction music. What do you say?
Oh, okay. Sorry, yeah, sure. Okay.
That means introduce them, Chris.
Thanks, Sal. Jersey City native Vince Royale, guys. He's done comedy from the East Coast to the West. Again, he's in a documentary. It's about to come out. It's called Inside Joke. It's 4 years in the making. 80 hours of footage featuring Vince. And also next March on MTV Networks, he'll be appearing as a recurring role on an MTV reality show. He's got two big shows in the Southern California area coming up next week. Please welcome our guest, Vince Royale.
Hey.
Cue music.
So, what's up?
All right, forget the music.
No music.
Vince, welcome to the show.
I like that song that came on right before.
Well, it came on at the wrong time. That's the only problem. It's supposed to, guest intro music is supposed to occur once you've introduced the guest. Then the intro music comes on.
Yeah, we don't usually just play random music.
Hey, just hit any music anytime. How's it going, Vince? That is the largest iced tea I've ever seen. You might have to go to the bathroom halfway through the show.
That's fine. It's good. No, I'm just excited, man. Yesterday was my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, it was fun.
And then, how old, Vince? You're Filipino, so you don't age.
He's actually 68.
I'm actually 55. I got a lot of Botox done, and a lot of you know to keep the youthful look.
Well, you're actually not just Filipino. I understand that you are sort of an amalgamation. You're like a universal child.
Funny, like for a long time, I did research. I didn't know my father's side for a long time, and was the assumption that my family was from Spain, and I was really excited. I was proud to be of European descent.
Well, because you're of royalty.
Exactly. And then so, right before my grandfather died, I went to go see him. I said, Grandpa, I want to learn more about my father's side. What part of Spain are we from? I just want to know my roots. And he goes, from Mexico. I'm like, oh.
The kingdom of Mexico. So where does the name Royale come from then?
No, it's actually my middle name. My government name is actually, my birth name is Rivera.
Your slave name?
My slave name, Rivera. I actually didn't change it to get a stage name. I actually decided before I moved to L.A., I'm just going to use Royale so student loan people couldn't find me if I would.
Did you know this, Chris? Are you aware of, it's not just a rumor, because people talk about it, but I've seen it firsthand. There are a lot of attractive young ladies who enjoy hanging on the arm of Mr. Vince Royale.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think when we did the Bad Advice show at Flappers a couple months ago, Vince was there with a girl who couldn't have been older than 24.
What chick was that?
Yeah, he doesn't even remember which one it was.
You'll never hear me utter that phrase.
Speaking of lovely ladies,
girl?
I want to shout out two porn star friends of mine, Kat Dillon and Kira Sid. I've been stalking them for a while now, and then they were kind enough to retweet me today, so I'm really excited about that. That made my birthday.
How does one go about stalking porn stars?
I know, they already spread their vaginas for the world. How do you stalk them exactly?
I don't know, just keep tabs on them on certain websites.
And are these actual porn stars? Because if you ask me, we kind of throw the word star around a little too much.
They're new. I just found them recently, and I really enjoy their work. Here's a picture.
Their work?
Here's a picture of them. Here you go.
He's going to show us a picture of the porn stars that he's stalking.
I wonder if at some point Vince will develop an emotional connection to them. And he's going to call him one day. And he's like, you were looking in that guy's eyes. You weren't just doing a scene.
No,
you were feeling it.
Yeah.
I'm not stalking.
It's
him.
Not acting.
I'm an admirer and supporter of their work. I've got to meet a few porn stars.
Now, what do you mean by support? Have you actually paid to watch their porn, or you get the free shit on UJizz?
No. Like I've actually got to meet them and know them personally. A few of them actually are human beings. They have emotions.
What?
And they have this one porn star friend of mine, and her name's Anya Navia. Shout out to her. She's a great mom. Amazing mom. And she said, why are you looking at me
Vince,
like that?
You are ruining this for me. You are ruining porn for me.
they have feelings. They have hopes. Chris, you know what? Hopes and dreams.
And children.
No,
my two biggest turnoffs.
Desires and wants.
She's a great person. Outside of porn, she's a great mom. And
how old is her kid?
I think her kid's about 4 or 5 years old. And she's doing it, to set up a good future for her daughter.
I wish my mom would have done porn. Vince, talk to us about how you got into stand-up comedy. How did that come about for you?
It was actually, back in college, I would host shows and I would book comics. But this is like before I even knew I was doing stand-up. I would just go up there and host shows that I didn't even know back then I was doing crowd work. So it was more, I decided, because prior to comedy, I was a promoter. I worked for different record labels. I graduated with a degree in marketing, so I had a knack for just getting the word out. But when I came to California, I knew I didn't want to get back into doing music. And I was depressed because I had my heart broken by a young lady like yourselves.
Were you in the living room crying like Chris Z?
Yeah, that was about the same.
Vince
way.
Cried one tear, then he moved on to the next girl.
No, I was a relationship type of guy, but this it didn't work out. Had my heart broken. I decided I'm gonna drink my life away. So I just started hanging out at bars. And one time And when I first moved here in California 5 years ago, I didn't know anybody at all. So I would just hang out at bars. And one time they had an open mic at the Lucky Strike bowling alley.
On Highland and Hollywood?
No. This was in Orange County.
Okay.
And I just signed up and I was drunk and I just started going up there and ranting. And people found it. I got a good response. And so I decided, hey, you know what? This makes me feel good. So at first it was just it was a coping mechanism to deal with the depression.
Vince, may I ask how old you are?
Didn't we go through that already,
no,
Chris?
No, he said it was his birthday, but I didn't catch how old he was.
Oh, my real age or my industry age?
Your real age.
Age range.
35, actually. But, you know what I mean? I like to tell women I'm 25 because I don't feel guilty when I'm having sex with 20-year-olds. You know, it's kind of like...
I would not feel guilty having sex with a 20-year-old if I were 80.
But I'm comfortable with it now. You know what I mean? I tell women, like, this is my age, and they're shocked. They're like, oh, my God, you're 35, but look, you look so young, but you're so hot.
In fact, I don't know if you know about this website, but Chris Z turned me on to a special website. It's called ageofconsent.com that tells you the age of sexual consent for each state in the union.
Really?
Yeah, you might want to check it out. Chris,
yeah,
you can help him out.
At the time, I was writing an essay where I was asserting that we should raise the age of consent across the nation. And
sure.
That's why I'm sure that's what he wanted to do.
I try not to deal with any more chicks under 25.
So that's your cutoff is 25?
23.
By the end of the show, it'll be 16.
My cutoff is consciousness. Vince, the reason I ask that question is because it seems like you've lived a lot. I remember once we spoke and you surprised me. I think you told me you were married, correct?
Yeah. You know what? I don't want to bring that up, but you know what I'm saying? Because that's something that I really put me in a really bad state, in a bad mood. I'm having a good day.
Way to be a downer, Chris. But I didn't know that. It doesn't say that on your bio here.
Yeah, I don't know why you brought that up. I don't want to talk about that. But thanks, Chris, for bringing that up.
All right, fair enough.
Apparently, Vince, you also worked on some soap operas. What did you do on soap operas?
No. I didn't do any freaking... I had one... It wasn't like a recurring role. It was like General Hospital. I had like one line.
What'd you do on GH? You got to say GH to prove
GH. It was at a bar. There was a fight scene, and I was like, "Hey guys, stop, knock it off."
And is that on YouTube? Can we catch that?
Improvise that, or was that actually scripted? Knock it off.
That thing was scripted.
But hey, man, you performed in some pretty big venues on the East Coast: Caroline's, Gotham Comedy Club, Comic Strip Live. In Yankee Stadium, what's that about?
Not Yankee Stadium. They have a restaurant.
Well, that's what you wrote in your bio, buddy.
It sounds better. But there's actually, they rebuilt Yankee Stadium, and they have a great shopping area in the stadium itself, and they have this restaurant. My buddy does comedy shows there. Well, he did, and I got a chance to perform when for the grand opening.
Okay.
So it was pretty cool.
Now, about the shows you currently produce, because you have quite a reputation for being a hustler. I mean, you get around, man. Every time I'm on Facebook, I see you're either appearing somewhere or producing the show itself. How did that come to be?
Because I'm a workaholic. Yeah. And like I said, it's always been growing up in Jersey and New York, you have to have that aggressive, assertive type of hustle or else you just get lost in this. It's just... I just took that same attitude and mentality when I moved here to California. And I just felt like it's just something that's in me that I got to continue doing. If not, if I feel unproductive if I'm not doing anything.
You do feature some pretty solid talent on the shows. At the Brea Improv next Tuesday, you get Richard Villa and Alfred Robles. Both of them are friends of mine, peers.
Yeah, great dudes. I got Toby Hicks on there, a couple of other guys, good friends of mine. And these guys are, you know, veterans. They've been in the business for a while, have solid credits. Alfred actually just got off tour with Gabriel Iglesias. He just recently featured in Comedy Central for his show. So I'm honored to have them on my show.
Yeah, when I see your lineups, a lot of people, they show up to those kind of outside promoter, you know, independently produced shows at the Improvs, and they frequently encounter a lot of comics who maybe are buddies with the guy who put the show on and varying levels of talent.
Right.
But in your case, I mean, you've got solid. I know Toby Hicks. I mean, this guy's been a headliner for at least a decade. Richard Villa is on the cusp of greatness. I'm amazed he's not a household name as it is. But
guys, I'm going to go ahead and play a clip of Vince Royale performing at the Broadway Comedy Club in New York.
Yes. You guys are judging me right now. It's looking like this Chinese Mexican better be funny, man. Damn, I didn't know Bruno Mars had a retarded brother. Oh, God. Let me explain what this is. You know, my mom's Filipino and my dad is missing. Hate that, you know what I mean? Like, you know, he used to leave the house and leave me with a babysitter all the time so we could go to the bar. Then one day I lost my virginity to the babysitter. Yeah, it wasn't that great. Uncle Jimmy was rough, man. Started wrestling and got weird. All my single moms, make some noise. No? Okay. Nice. Anybody want to be a single mom? I hate being single though, you know, because you go to a bar and they name the drinks after things you're not going to get, right? Sex on the beach, screaming orgasm. Like, really? They should just name it after things that's really going to happen. Like, I'd order it. I'm like, hi, can I have some sex with regret, please? I'll take one for the team. Have some fake phone numbers. DUI, and some blue balls on the rocks. It's crazy. That's some real stuff, man. Like, lately I've been to older women, though, right? Because older women don't play games. Except for bingo. They love that. Cute, though. Like, my grandma's friends always flirt with me, right? So I took her on a date. She's so cute. We got discount movies, discounted diners. I didn't have to meet her parents. And I know it's not going to be a long-term relationship, right? Well, and I just want a friend with benefits, like Medicare. I spoiled it, though. I took her shopping. Went to Forever 21, right? I got her this cute dress, and I noticed she had this tattoo on her thigh. I'm like, damn, Bertha. That is sexy. What is that, a mermaid? She goes, no, that's my veins. I'm like, oh. That was nasty. That's good, man. My best friend's West Indian. He's from an island called Rikers. He's always trying to get me to sneak him something in, like a cell phone. He's like, yo, Vince, I'm here with an iPhone. I'm like, what are you texting from prison? Like, can you imagine that? I'm like, yeah, drop the soap, LOL. 27 more years, sad face.
I was telling you to turn it down, and it was...
Well, I could lower the volume.
No, we're good. That was Vince Royale performing at Broadway Comedy Club in New York City. You know what? Unfortunately, I see that you have three thumbs down. Who thumbs down you on YouTube?
Probably Bertha or my boy that got locked out.
The AARP.
So what's it like, man, performing out here in Los Angeles? Are you happy? You say you arrived in Los Angeles, what did you say, 5 or 7 years?
5 years.
5 years ago, you arrived in Los Angeles. Do you regret it, or are you happy to be here?
I mean, at first, I really didn't know anybody. When I first moved, it was very depressing. Like I said, I was going through a bad breakup, and honestly, I didn't know I was going to do comedy. Something just came into my life, you know, just me trying to drink my life away and trying to use comedy as a coping mechanism to overcome my depression. And that's what I did. And eventually it just got to the point that I got so obsessed with it. I did it 3-4 times a week. And the next thing you know, I'm doing it 5-6 times a week, 7 times. And I just continued with it. I stuck with it.
I'm not sure that comedy is a wiser or healthier option than drinking.
Hey, but let me ask you something that always interests me. Like they say that Brad Pitt loves architecture, and he would be an architect if he weren't an actor. So since you have a marketing degree, would you be working at some ad agency right now if you weren't doing stand-up?
I don't know, because the thing about stand-up, what I like is that, like, you're your own boss. You know, you don't have to. That's what I like about it, the freedom to be able to just, you know, book your own shows, do your own marketing. I don't have to answer anybody. So I'm really sticking with it. So hopefully it can be something lucrative where I don't have to go back doing a corporate job, because I did work, like I said, for record labels back when I was in New York, and I just hated being in the office doing freaking spreadsheets and doing research for your boss, and you know, but that's what I like about stand-up. I don't know what I'd be doing outside of stand-up. Probably starting my own business. I've always been like entrepreneurial.
Yeah,
like Chris said, I'm a hustler. That's all I know. All my life, I grew up in Jersey City where everybody's trying to hustle each other. Yeah. Trying to compete. So I just took that attitude and that mentality, and I just apply that to what I do with stand-up. And like I said, if nobody's going to book me shows, nobody's going to put me on, I'll create my own shows. I'll start my own open mic. I'll make sure I get a show at the Improv. I'll make sure I book my own tours. I've always been proactive. I've never wanted to sit around and wait for somebody to, hey, hopefully they'll discover me, you know?
And in 2011, a hosted at the John Lovitz Comedy Club, you were voted, or you're the winner, of the funniest comedian in Southern California, 2011.
Yeah, that was really fun. I was really shocked that I won anything. I've never won anything in my life.
What did you have a prize? Was there a monetary prize?
Yeah, I think I got to headline the John Lovitz. That was the first time I started actually headlining, which is fucking crazy. Because at that time, I've never headlined. And I was like, damn, that means I'm forced to freaking come up with more material, do more time.
Yeah, so now you're headlining. You're doing 45 minutes?
I can do about 45, but you know what I'm saying? I have like 30 minutes of material that I don't like that I'll just throw out there.
Yeah.
But about 40, 45 minutes that I'm happy with. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like I said, as a comic, you're always constantly changing and evolving your jokes anyway.
You should be.
Yeah.
If not, you belong on the road in Florida.
Where Chris came from.
Working one C room after another, talking about, you know, construction and
they're actually pharmaceuticals. For that contest, they're actually starting the second one in February.
So you mean I could potentially win Funniest Comedian in Southern California 2013?
Yeah, they actually have great prizes. Like the top prize is like $500. You get to get spots at the Improv, Comedy Store, and all that.
I just want to win a...
And I got a Mr. Hankey collectible doll. Yeah, that was it. I got $300, Mr. Hankey collectible, and I got the headline of John Lovitz Club.
Now, let me ask you, Vince, since we talked about young, attractive women earlier, have you experienced what is commonly referred to as chuckle fuckers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of them. And
really?
Which is funny is because, like, women in every online dating profile, most women will put they want somebody funny, a great guy with a great sense of humor.
They always say that, but I figure they just say that because they're too embarrassed or too shameful to say, I want a rich man.
Yeah, that too. But, you know, I think that I've seen not so attractive comedians go up and kill and destroy, and all of a sudden they're hooking up with a chick after a show. It's just a matter of being on top of your game.
Yeah, really. And when you do well, the thing is people make the assumption that you must work consistently. And look how good he did. He must be somebody. He must be a working comic. No, they don't realize that. I know a girl who did a spot on late night TV and went back to a serving shift the next morning.
Really?
Yeah.
Serving what?
That's the reality of it.
Exactly. So you can what I'm saying is to my fellow comics out there, you can easily fool them. Just have a good set one night and be like, hey, you know what? I do this every night.
You know, so far telling any women I have a weekly internet radio show has gotten me no pussy whatsoever. They're not impressed.
You got to make sure they listen.
Hey, you guys, let's go ahead and move on with our segments. You will be joining us until the very end because we want you to chime in on our last stuff. Okay. We're going to get into our next segment here, which is Chris's Corner. Chris, you all set?
I'm all set, Sal.
All right.
Fire away.
Chris's
Give me some
Corner.
Music. Yeah. Recently, I overheard two adult coworkers discussing Noah's Ark, the Old Testament narrative of man who, at God's behest, built a boat capable of accommodating some 50,000 species of animals and 1 million species of insects, then coaxed them all aboard in 1 week. Two of every animal, from Arctic polar bears to Komodo dragons, hailing from different corners of the earth, plus 40 days worth of each creature's unique dietary requirements. That's 40 days worth of uncanned, unrefrigerated food, plus the live flora and fauna that some creatures require. Two of every animal whose sexes had to be confirmed, many that would have had to been sequestered to prevent them from preying on each other, plus tapirs, hippos, and countless other beasts that breathe air but spend the bulk of their days immersed in water. Who walked these beasts to prevent muscular atrophy? Who filed their hooves and teeth? Who shoveled the mountains of waste these creatures produce daily? Well, according to the good book, a crew of eight. And after 40 consecutive days in these conditions, not one of these creatures suffered illness or injury that prevented it from mating successfully when it reached its final destination. What about birds? Are we to believe that they sat stationary for 40 days? Or were they allowed 1 hour of exercise per day like maximum security convicts? In the end, God self-imposes a ban on global flooding in perpetuity. He casts a bow in the clouds to embody this promise. This story might pass muster with a child, but adults know, or should know, that the atmospheric laws of refraction cause rainbows, not God. I could go on about how patently ludicrous this story is, but by now I've made my point to any right-minded listener. There are and will always be folks who claim that science, mathematics, statistical, and logistical improbabilities that render this scenario hopelessly implausible were bested by God's will, which begs the common sense question, then why wouldn't he just use a more efficient method for mass murdering mankind in the first place? That's Chris's Corner. Thanks for joining us.
Chris, why do you worship the devil?
Because he's been a lot kinder than to me, Sal.
I think, you know what? We have come out of the closet here. When I say we, I mean Chris, come out of the closet as an atheist. You are an outspoken atheist.
I think I've come out of the closet as a thinker. Is more accurate.
All right, we're going to get into our next segment, which is Sal's Weekly Rant. Let's hit that. For those of you men out there with thinning hair, I hope you find your answer. I never have. It all sucks. I first noticed my hair thinning at my crown in my late 20s. My hairstylist lied to me. My girlfriends lied to me. I saw it. Apparently no one else did. It became much more prominent by my mid-30s. I was even approached by an audience member after a big show. Great comedy, he said. Did you know your hair is thinning in the back? I scanned through numerous tapes of on-camera acting assignments, and what stood out was a scene from a webisode pilot where I chased my cute wife down a courtyard after she accuses me of lusting after a neighbor. I froze the playback. There it was, my bald spot. This was no hairstylist or girlfriend around to lie to me. I was going bald. What to do? My first option was a shampoo called Nioxin. Daily usage promising to thicken the hair. But it wasn't my hair's thickness that was the problem. It was the lack of hair. I looked into Rogaine and Propecia. One was a pill, one was a topical solution. I'm paranoid of taking pills. Anything other than an occasional antibiotic freaks me out. What the hell is this doing to me? And a daily liquid to coat my scalp? Brain cancer. I finally succumbed to a Sunday morning infomercial, Hair Club for Men. You've seen the ads running for at least a generation. I'm not only the Hair Club president, I'm also a client. They have two options at Hair Club. One is a biomatrix weave, which is fancy talk for a toupee. The other is hair plugs, or hair transplants, where they remove hair from a more fertile area of your head and insert it into so-called plugs into the balding area. The price for that was at least $10,000. The price for the toupee was $2,000. I'll admit, the toupee worked. No one knew. No one could tell. Only a few close friends and family members were aware of my little hairy secret. But it has maintenance, lots and lots of maintenance. For one, you need to have more than one hair system, as it's also called. Like owning a suit, you need to have one to wear while the other is being cleaned or repaired. It's also messy. You adhere the toupee to your head with either glue or tape. I chose tape, leaving me with the chore of the weekly removal and cleaning of the sticky mess on my head and on the system. Yes, it looked real. I was even confident to go swimming and ride roller coasters. I even once let a pretty young girl run her fingers through it. Eventually, I grew tired of the work, the maintenance, and the secret. I decided to shave my head completely bald. That is no utopia either. Even with a clean shaven head, you can still see the bald spot, and I'm forced to shave it at least every 3 days, lest my bald spot reveal itself to a greater degree. And I like to use good disposable razors, and as any man will tell you, good razors are a ripoff. Going bald sucks, and all the so-called solutions also suck. I recommend you just be a guy who's balding. Fuck it all. There's no hope. Who loves you, baby? Thank you. That was Sal's weekly rant.
I love it, Sal. I love, Sal, that you reported that like it was late breaking news. Like there's people out there going, what? Going bald is not a great not a high point in our lives.
Well, you know, some guys I think have a better time with it. You know, they say it's a big fear for a lot of guys about going bald, but I think some guys just ease into it a little easier or better than others. I had a real hard time with it emotionally.
I will say this, and I've always believed this. It is much more distinguished to have a shaved head or to be bald like Captain Jean-Luc Picard than it is to see a guy in a toupee. That, to me, is the most pathetic You know, when you see a guy and it doesn't match the hair.
Well, you're talking about a bad toupee then.
Yeah, but how often do you really see a convincing toupee?
You wouldn't know that if it's a toupee that's convincing, you wouldn't know.
You can tell. Everybody can tell.
The hair's too thick. You never see it actually connecting to the scalp. it never perfectly matches that, you know, the hair and the kind of crown, the surrounding hair. Yeah, I just think, man, it's a bit like a man who lies about his age. It's just sad.
Like especially those Filipinos. I hear they lie about their age because they look younger. Hey, guys, let's get into our final segment of the day, which we call Tragic Comedy. This is where we, as stand-up comedians, talk about the worst comedic experience that we've ever had, whether at a comedy club, at a venue, with an audience, with another comedian. Worst comedic experiences called Tragic Comedy. Chris, you first.
Well, Sal, it just so happens that one of my lowest comedic moments happened last night.
What?
That's right. I have been trying to get into the Ice House for about 6 years. The Ice House is the country's oldest comedy club.
It is the oldest comedy club.
Pasadena, California. I've been leaning on the booker for years. She left. I started leaning on the next booker. They put up kind of old school comics, you know, guys who were clean, you know, your typical kind of punchline oriented white guy. And I think I fit in perfectly, but I've always gotten the same line. Look, we've got literally several thousand comedians in our database. Many of them are far more distinguished than you are. They've never told me, we don't think you're capable. We don't think your material is not good enough, nothing like that. Just simply that you don't rate. So I circumvented the booker. I started talking directly to the owner of the club. This guy's been around forever. His concept of comedy is what I do. It's that guy, you know, the guy that you see on The Tonight Show telling good, clean jokes. And he was very kind to me, and he helped set up a showcase last night. But it was kind of short notice. They let me know on Monday. So I told everyone I could. Jeremy Hansen of Skid Row Studios, owner, proprietor, chief sound engineer of Skid Row Studios, was there last night with his lovely, lovely girlfriend. And but he and his girlfriend were two of four people. Two of four people who showed up for the show. I went on second, and in the middle of my set, the monitor started to crackle loudly. Unbeknownst to me, the audience couldn't hear it. It was in the monitor. The monitor faces the performer. So to me...
Wait, when you say a monitor, you mean a speaker?
No. A monitor is the speaker that's meant so a performer can hear what's going on. So if there's sound issues or if he's not coming through, he can hear it himself.
Really? I've never heard of that.
Yeah. The musicians do it a lot as well. That's why it's facing away from the audience.
I think I've seen that.
So the whole time I'm up there, I'm trying to find the right way to hold the microphone. Again, unbeknownst to me, the audience doesn't hear the sound issues. So I just look like I'm either crazy or incompetent.
Yeah.
And luckily it happened to several other comedians throughout the night. So I know, you know, I'm not crazy or incompetent. In the middle of my set, this girl in the front row, again, there's four audience members. I don't know if she came down with an advanced case of consumption, but just started hacking, coughing loudly in the middle of my set. I had 10 minutes to work with. When that abated, two other females came into the showroom, not quietly. They came in, they didn't wait till I got off stage and sneak in. They came in right in the middle of my set. They were too noisy doing it. It was just not great. It was a comedy of errors. And this was the show. And again, the booker was in the room, and Bob, the owner of the Ice House Comedy Club, were both there.
And Skid Row Studios owner was there.
Yeah. And although he was very kind and he told me, he said, oh, you know, you pulled it off like a professional or whatever. I didn't notice all these distractions, but I did. And I felt like given all those kind of variables, I was able to perform at about 60% of actually what I'm capable of delivering. You know, so that was last night. Yeah,
that was Chris's tragic comedic experience.
There you go. I'll throw it to you.
You still seem depressed about it. I'm sorry to hear that. Mine happened when we were on a USO tour. Now, to be specific, we're working for Armed Forces Entertainment, which owns the USO. So we are in the country of Bahrain that was recently featured on the news because they had a issue with Kim Kardashian visiting Bahrain. Also, Michael Jackson spent some time there. So it's a little island off of Saudi Arabia. So we are on a military base in Bahrain about to do our show. And the crowd, I mean, I would hardly call it a crowd as much as just a mob. They were a drunken young mob that had just gotten it back into port from probably being in Afghanistan or something. They could not give a shit about a comedy show going on that they might not even have known was going to even happen that night. So we get up on stage. We're going to do our thing. They are not even paying attention. They're yelling. They're screaming. They're drunk. And you know what? We did not even do our show. We essentially just turned it into a drunken, hey, buddy, come on up and tell a joke. We invited people up on stage to just tell dirty jokes. And then we had a joke contest where I then just gave people meal vouchers to the winner of the dirty joke contest. So here I am. I traveled to the other side of the fucking world to do a comedy show for these people. They didn't give a shit. And meanwhile, I can't cuss them out because we're supposed to show patriotism. I couldn't say, hey, fuck you, you stupid motherfuckers. I'll be like, well, you know, and then thank you for your service, you know. So what did we do? We put on a stupid show. And then at the end, the best part was at the very end of the basically voucher giveaway show, at the very end, the guy who worked for the base comes up. He goes, is that what you guys do? Like, he thought that was our show. He thought that our show was just invite people from the audience, have them tell dirty jokes, and then give out meal vouchers. Yes, this is what we do for the USO traveling the world. This is our show.
Yeah, that crowd wasn't just an unruly mob. They had clearly made up their minds from moment one to not just ignore the show, but to disrupt it.
Yeah, they were very disruptive. Chris was there. He testified to that. In fact, this is almost like Chris has two tragic comedies in one show. The other one brought to my me. Vince, what do you got to share with us? Some of your tragic comedy experiences.
I think it's being like on the road. The worst is like getting booked out of town, knowing that, all right, and the booker just looking at you, hey, man, you know what? We didn't make enough money at the bar. I was wondering if I could buy you some chicken wings.
Oh, wait, instead of paying you.
Yes. Or like I've spent nights just sleeping in the car. I remember driving. This was a few years ago. I had a gig in the Punchline, San Francisco. I was just excited. And just for my excitement, I didn't even think of like setting up like a hotel or a motel room. I said, you know what? I'm just going to grab a couple buddies of mine, my buddy Will and my boy Kareem from Jersey. We drove up to San Francisco and we spent so much money on gas, we didn't have enough money for a motel. It's like, what are we going to do? We can't just sleep in the car. We're going to have to. We stayed. We slept in the car for 2 days in a 24-hour fitness parking lot. Luckily, my friend Will was a member, so we were able to go inside and shower.
He let you in on his guest pass?
Yeah.
So basically, it sounds like your tragic comedy experiences is just being a comedian.
Yeah, just being a comedian, dude.
I don't think your average person knows about all the stuff you got to go through, especially working on the road as a comedian. All the stuff you got to face. All they see is the glamour and the glitter. They see you up there on the stage. They see the lights. They see the applause and the laughter. They don't know what goes on behind the scenes, like sleeping in a friggin' 24-hour fitness parking lot.
Yeah, stuff like that. I've slept on floors. I've slept in cars. I've stayed up all night.
You might say chuckle fuckers are the only redeeming portion of being a road comic. Have you had experiences like that, Chris, where you're just having to rough it while you're on the road?
Oh God, absolutely, man. I did some work in, I think it was Washington. Now, I'd lived out here for a few years at the time, and I'd been off the road because I actually was, you know, auditioning and had some stuff going on locally. So I go up to do the show, and I forget all about the fact that the weather's different when you're up north in the Pacific Northwest.
You didn't pack a jacket?
Yeah, and I ended up having to sleep in my car one night, and I go to sleep kind of early, let's say, you know, it's like 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. I wake up a few hours later, like shaking, and I literally had to go into my trunk, pull every item of clothing, and make myself like a snowman of clothing. I had to put everything on to keep myself warm because that's the only heat I had.
And what the hell? Are you in the Walmart parking lot?
No, I was, it was one of these things where they line up work for you. Let's say you have a show on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, but you fly in on Tuesday. So, you know, it's an off night and they don't provide a hotel. So I had nowhere to stay. And of course, putting yourself up in a hotel eats into your wages. You know, sure. In some cases, yeah, it'll eat your wages for the entire night.
Yeah.
So, you know, I go, no big deal. It won't be the first time I've slept in my car. But again, I didn't take into account that I wasn't prepared for the weather. And in fact, I went into the hotel and I told them the circumstances. I said, listen, I'm booked here tomorrow. I'm a comedian. I perform, you know, I'm here for the next couple nights. Because sometimes a lot of hotel owners, they'll let you stay for free. You know, they know you're on the road. You know why you're there. If they have a free room, they'll just let you, you know, use it. But this girl was just this young, cunty little, you know, she was on her cell phone, clearly wanted to get back to her conversation. So she just was like, no. I'm like, is there anyone you can call? She's like, no, the manager will be in tomorrow morning. So that option fell through. So I went back out to the car and I slept in the parking lot of the hotel that I would be staying at the next day.
I'm surprised the security guard didn't kick you out of the parking lot.
Wow.
Yeah, at one point I did kind of wander around into one of the buildings, hoping I could find just maybe like under a staircase or some little crevice that I could.
Be careful, because people get killed in staircases.
This happened over the summer. I got booked to do some spots in Vegas. So I decided, hey, you know, I'm going to be adventurous. I'm going to drive to Vegas on my own. So I took my little Honda Civic.
Now, wait a second. You're an Asian guy with a Honda Civic? I don't believe it.
And no insurance. Because, all right. So
that's the Mexican part.
Exactly. So I'm driving 2 hours. I'm close to Barstow. My check engine light pops on. And all of a sudden, smoke starts fucking coming out the hood. And I'm like, oh, no. It overheats. So, like, I had to pull over. I'm in the freeway stuck. I don't have AAA. I don't have insurance. So if the cops come, I know I'm screwed. So the state trooper comes and goes, is there a problem here? I was like, oh, I have a gig in Vegas. I'm a comedian. I got a show tonight. Hey. And then the dude was cool enough to help me push the car to the next exit. Mm-hmm. So he never even asked for my paperwork. So I was freaking shitting bricks because I'm like, they're going to tow the car, not going to make my gig. But I was stuck in Barstow.
Well, so what happened? Did you make it to the gig and did you get your car repaired and make it to Vegas?
What happened was I actually stayed in Barstow for the night. I
did a show at the police station.
I slept in my car again, and I told the booker, look, I'm not going to make it tonight. I'm going to have to get on the Greyhound. They said, that's fine. You can do the show tomorrow night. So I was fortunate that there was two shows. So I got on the Greyhound bus and made it to the second show.
I don't know what's worse, the breaking down and not making the show, or the fact that he was stuck in Barstow. That's the part that stands out for me.
This is like a tragic, not just tragic comedies, but tragic travels.
Yeah.
Is what it is. Because, yeah, I've been to Barstow. What is in Barstow?
Nothing. It's a McDonald's and a Starbucks.
I was going to say, that's what there is. There's the McDonald's that I've heard is one of the world's busiest McDonald's.
Because there's nothing else around.
I guess everybody on their way back and forth to Vegas passes that McDonald's. And it's real big. It's like kind of built inside a train car, so it's real conspicuous.
Yeah.
I've eaten there a couple times or so.
See, I just don't think your average person knows all the stuff that a comedian goes through to entertain. I mean, how do you keep that a proper attitude? Because if I had to sleep in my car and then I had to get on stage that night, I'd be pissed.
Yeah, the average person, what I've discerned, what I've gleaned, is that the average person thinks that comedy is fun 24 hours a day.
Right.
And it's really not. It's 23 hours a day of misery.
Yeah, I know. And then people, like, they meet you and they're like, hey, why aren't you funny? They're like, because I'm having a fucking terrible day. I got to do community service. I'm waiting for my EBT to kick in.
You know? We're going
to
end the show on that high note. Vince, tell our audience where they can hear you, where they can see you.
I'm going to be at the Bray Improv, like Chris had mentioned, this Tuesday, the 8 p.m. show, and the Ontario Improv on Thursday, December 13th and the 11th on the Bray. So please come out. It's going to be my big birthday show. I got some great comics, solid veterans, and great comedians.
Good Vince, you have a website or someplace where they can look up this information?
I do, but it's not updated, so they can go on my Twitter or Facebook, and it's simple, Vince Royale with an E in the end, like Royale with cheese.
And Vince can also be seen sleeping in the Target parking lot on December 9th.
I will.
Chris, where are you going to be?
I'll be headlining Echoes Under Sunset on Glendale Boulevard in Los Angeles next Tuesday night at 9 p.m. It's a free show. Free parking. It's a beer and wine bar. A lot of fun. Again, I'll be headlining. Please come out and see this show. You're more than welcome. It's a great place. It's quaint. A lot of fun. And
what's your Twitter handle?
ChrisZ34. It's Chris Z, letter Z, 34. Follow me on Twitter. Like us on Facebook as well.
Yes, like our Facebook page. In fact, we're going to have a special prize for the next person that likes us on Facebook. It's going to come out of my own pocket. The next person that likes us on Facebook will get a special prize. Wait, no. People in the studio are trying to. No one that is here now will qualify.
If you can see me with your own eyes, you're just qualified.
I'm like, I want that $25.
Yeah, exactly. I'm giving cash out.
Really?
Follow me on Twitter at Sal Los Angeles. And thanks to Vince Royale, he showed me how to hook up my Twitter with my Facebook. So basically, when I go on post on Facebook, it goes on to Twitter.
That's right.
But when I post on Twitter, it doesn't go on Facebook. So that's where I can put my secret sexual thoughts.
There you go.
I'm also going to be a guest right here on Bad Advice tomorrow, hosted by Drew Marks, right here at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We'd like to thank Jeremy Hansen, Skid Row Studio, Nicholas Chacon, our sound engineer. And we would like to thank you for listening. What was that, Chris?
Wes Hambright, Orange Dog Music.
Wes Hambright, Orange Dog Music. My name is Sal Rodriguez, co-host.
Chris Z. Please tune in again next week. We do this every Friday at 1 p.m. right here on skidrowstudios.com, REO, registered ear offenders.
And we'd like to thank our guest one last time, Vince Royale.
Thank you guys for having me, man. Check out these guys. They're funny.
Peace.
Thank you, guys.